What we want to do just before we start the meeting is we're handing out the spreadsheets, and we would much prefer all you folks here that are here to get the spreadsheets that you just stay in your seats, and we will pass, the pages will pass out the spreadsheet. I think last year one of our pages got knocked over. And so we'd... Right. We're trying to cut health costs here, so... so if you would just remain seated, they'll pass them out, and then we will start the meeting after we have passed them out, and after, obviously, we're going to do Representative Bunn's bill first, but she's here, but it'll take a few minutes before we have a quorum. And I'd just like to know, let you know that those people up in the back there on the on this side are all from Duluth, and they're some are. Yeah, and they're from the St. Mary's Medical Center Auxiliary and the St. Luke's Hospital Auxiliary, and they're here with the Hospital Auxiliary Day in St. Paul. What do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You used it all.
I'll get it.
No, I can. You used it all up yet.
My wife is really busy for a long time.
Yeah.
If there's somebody that does not have a spreadsheet, would they raise their hand and we'll get... There's a bunch over here. Make sure Nancy Haas gets hers.
Wait a second. Wait a second. You got to delete all of it. We don't. We still should be in there, right? At least that's what I've been told.
We're one short of a quorum, but we're going to start House File 1873. Now we do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order. Do we have minutes?
No.
And we have no minutes, so we don't have to deal with that. And Representative Bunn moves House File 1873. It would be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we are going over House File 1873. We have a delete all amendment. Mr. Chair, did you want to...
So Representative Bunn wishes to move... A07-0620, which is a delete all, has some changes from the bill we discussed yesterday, but it's very similar. And this is an amendment to get the bill in the order she wants it. And she will explain the bill after the amendment differences after we adopt it. So all those in favor of the delete all amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have heard presentations on this bill several times now, so I'll quickly summarize kind of what was the features of the original bill and then talk more specifically about what new additions have been incorporated in the bill and the delete all amendment in the last couple of days. as this process has come to a conclusion. Originally, if you've heard this presentation before, we talked about the key features as being cost containment goals and actions, directing the Department of Health to have regional and state cost containment goals, to report annually to the legislature on whether these goals are being met, and if not, to make recommendations how we could move towards achieving our goals. A second key feature of the legislation was disclosure of payment information to consumers that when requested at the point of the provider, consumers both who are insured and uninsured would receive payment information on both what the cost, what the third-party payer will be paying, and also what their cost will be personally and out of pocket. This, of course, is related to the importance of having consumers be educated to make choices in our healthcare system to improve its efficiency in the markets. A third component of that original legislation was a public-private partnership for healthcare reform, the establishment of a healthcare transformation task force that would be charged over this summer and next fall to review and coordinate the myriad of information out there at the state, regional, and national level, having to do with quality measurements, cost containment, moving to electronic records, and all these type of information that affects the cost and quality of our system. In addition, this healthcare transformation task force would be directed to evaluate that information, evaluate our options in this state moving forward for achieving universal, affordable coverage for citizens of Minnesota by 2010, and to make recommendations at the end of this next year to the legislature for how to move forward to do that. In addition, in this program is pay-for-performance incentives, that clinics and providers would be paid for performance with regard to achieving outcomes with their patients and to achieving the use of best practice approaches in their medical practice. In addition, we include payment system reform. And both in the payment for performance reform and also the payment system reform, the goal here is to support the establishment of medical homes for the care and management of chronic conditions for both children and adults throughout the population in order to save costs and improve outcomes. In the hearings at this session, we have heard from a number of medical institutions on initiatives and pilots that they have conducted with medical home models, with management of chronic care conditions, typically through nurses overseeing this management process, and that they have improved the health outcomes of their patients and greatly reduced the cost to the system of managing these chronic conditions. The cost savings come primarily through avoidance of acute care, excessive doctor visits, and most importantly, from avoiding emergency room admittals and hospitalizations. So we're very encouraged about the prospects for obtaining these cost savings in the system by avoiding acute care and having preventive and good management of chronic conditions over time. Finally, the original legislation included pilot projects, community collaborative pilot projects, often private-public partnerships, to bring in the uninsured in that community, uninsured who may be experiencing mental illness or chronic conditions, who are costing the system a lot of money, again, through access to emergency care, and bring them in and provide them insurance coverage in a way that will be beneficial both cost to the system and socially to the communities. Those were the key features of the legislation as it was prior to yesterday. And what I'm going to do now, hopefully a little bit briefly, but there's a lot of sections to this bill. There's many proposals of the bill. First, I want to take a moment to state an aside, which is that this legislation is draws on innovative ideas from many, many sources, from the governor, from the Senate, from the Minnesota Medical Association, from the Healthy Minnesota Project, from members of the Health and Human Services Policy and Finance Committees, and others who have been discussing these issues for many, many years. It's been a collaborative effort. to the bill as appears today in the delete all. Provide a little short guide here and underscore the new sections to the bill. The focusing on the key elements, I want to start with Section 2, that one thing that is now in the bill is the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange proposed by our governor. The exchange would facilitate the incorporation of 125 plans for employers, small employers in our state. The exchange has two goals. We have a segment of our population currently through group health plans that are covered by employers who take advantage of pre-tax dollars to help pay for their health insurance. Small employers who do not have access currently to these 125 plans and their employees do not have the advantage of taking advantage of these pre-tax dollars. By establishing the exchange to serve as a mechanism for the handling of smaller employer pre-tax programs for the employees, we can benefit these individuals by making health insurance more affordable to them. So the health insurance exchange would address this issue of allowing the use, greater use of pre-tax dollars. Also, it would be an information sharing exchange for the general public with regards to individual purchasers of health insurance to provide comparison across health insurance policies that are available and those type of things. Going now to skipping to some other key components, in Article 2, Section 1, and in my version from yesterday, that would be given on page 11, may have altered a little bit. Another key component of this legislation now is uniform claims processing. And this is something that's been an initiative for many, many years, been discussed. Recently, the governor took, he himself and a delegation went to Utah to look at what was being done there in terms of unifying claims processing. Having done that, this bill was put forward by, I believe, Representative Tyson, 1870, and this is now incorporated in this health care reform package. Will hopefully save administrative costs in the system and also move us to greater ease with regards to moving to electronic claims filings and electronic records eventually. Again, I'm going to highlight some of the new sections of the...
Just a minute, Representative Abler.
Well, what's your pleasure? If we have questions as she goes through, do you want us to or wait at the end, or what do you want?
If it's a brief clarification, why don't you ask it now? And want to really get into the discussion, we do it at the end.
Well, maybe, this is, see if it's brief or not, but on this Article 2, which is the uniform claim deal, later on in the bill you have a study. There seems like there's dueling provisions about claims compatibility, and maybe we'll just talk about that later, but there's two provisions, and one's a study, one tells them how to do it, right?
Yeah.
So do you want to comment about, you're aware of the dualism there, or do you know if they overlap?
I would like Representative Thiessen to address this, because this is language that was just added in the last 20 hours or so, and I have read it, but he probably has...
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We actually have an amendment. There's been an agreement by everybody about how to do this now. And so we probably can take study language out because I think we've agreed on how to accomplish that. And we'll have an amendment here. It may be here now, but shortly.
And we'll
the dual can be put
down. We're going to have them ask them if they'll come up later when at the appropriate time and discuss the agreement. Representative Pepin.
Thanks, Chair Huntley. And Representative Bunn, you might have said this, I might have just missed it, but the health insurance exchange, I know that was the governor's proposal. I'm wondering, is this the exact proposal, or were there some significant changes, or is there anything that you could highlight the changes, or do we just have to read through it? Or?
And maybe others can confirm this on the staff, but this is, I believe, pretty much exactly the proposal that's included.
Mr. John.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Pepin, I think maybe the only one change, instead of conforming change, the governor's exchange language sort of went along with Minnesota Care 2, and since that's not being done here, the references to Minnesota Care 2 were removed.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman Huntley. Representative Bunn,
As you know, I mentioned to Representative Huntley yesterday, I wish we could have a side-by-side of the three health exchanges, health insurance exchanges, because three of us, I happen to work on Representative Abler's, and you know, I think we've had reconsiderations about that even since we created that, but I wish we could see what the difference is among different exchanges. You know, maybe the governor's is the best, but I heard good things about Representative Huntley's, too. So is there any possibility we'll be able to see a side-by-side of the highlights of each of those exchanges?
Well, I think that's... Mr. Chair?
Well, Representative Bunn and Representative Erickson, we'll try to get it, but this is the time of year when our staff is working 20-plus hours a day, so it's not ready right now, but we will hope to get it to you as soon as possible. But we will probably have voted on this bill before we can see the side-by-side. But this is the governor's proposal.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, the one distinction is the Minnesota Care 2 in terms of bringing in Minnesota Care children and their families into it. Representative Huntley, could you possibly comment on what was different in your exchange that's not here or why you were going forward in this manner?
Representative Bunn and members, I think the governor's proposal is quite clear. We had some language that was closer to Massachusetts at one time, and I think his language for the exchange is good. Representative Bunn.
Yeah. And just briefly, Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I think that I have continued to hear over the last few weeks some issues being raised regarding the exchanges. And I do think this task force may need to, you know, have further discussion about that as it goes forward this summer and fall as well.
Thank you.
Okay, again, continuing on the issue of the changes with regards to the delete all. In Article 2, Section 10, we have now included in the reform legislation here text regarding requirements for nonprofit hospitals to report to the Commissioner on Community Benefits starting in fiscal year 2009. This was text originally included in House File 1855. It is now included as part of this health care reform package.
If I could just interrupt again, that 1855 is the governor's bill.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
And this has been a matter I've worked on a bunch, and I'm glad to see it moving along again. Is this, Representative Bunn, is this language the hospitals agree works for them, and is there agreement on this language as being the language that works there? Or is this a placeholder?
They can testify if they wish, but this is what the hospitals want, and my understanding is based on the Catholic Hospital Association's definition of uncompensated care, charity care.
And one other question, and I keep getting the answers to this one, and the question of uncompensated. I was hoping last year we got to the point that we're talking about cost, and I remain uncomforted about that we're there when they say we have uncompensated care of $1 billion or whatever they come up with every year. Is that worked out on you? And this is just the community benefit part, right? There's no change in the uncompensated care language. Does anybody know that?
Representative.
Well, there is some language on page 17. I don't know if this gets exactly at your issue on 1725, where there's also a definition of community care, which is cost of medical care, which, you know, the hospital terms after billing for services a demonstrated inability to pay. Some of those would be covered in there, and there's some discussion of bad debt expenses, but it's the value of a cost and not charges made. So I just see that language at the bottom. So we're trying to move in that direction.
And just not to make a big point, but just every year they come down as a report, it's a huge amount of money, and different people report it different ways, and so I struggle with that. So if at the end of the day we can find a way, so if they say it's $20 million, this $20 million that they lost because of their cost or something. We the same index along, that's all I'm getting at.
And with Mr.
It would help their case.
We're trying to get kind of definitions in place here.
There's good luck.
There's always interpretation around definitions.
Yeah, good luck with that project.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, moving to the next item that's new, Lee introduced, in, at least in this bill today, Section 3013. It's now called, it was already in the bill. We've now retermed it provider-directed care rather than just physician-directed care. That's in order to acknowledge that in many of these pilot programs to have, again, case management of chronic conditions with a close cooperation between physicians, nurses, families, and patients. It often is the management is actually done primarily by the nurses involved, and so we wanted to extend that to be provider rather than just physician-directed. This portion of the legislation refers to fee-for-service public program, so it's a fairly small number of people involved in this provider-directed care, but a very important segment of the population in terms of experiencing fairly high cost because of chronic conditions and high levels of disability. So again, we're hoping for some significant cost savings due to better management and coordination of that care.
If I could interrupt again, since I was just upstairs before I came down here talking to Dr. Schiff, who is the medical director for Human Services, actually about this particular item. This is, again, part of the governor's proposal, and it's one of the rare times that they were able to convince the people that write fiscal notes that you can actually get a savings by doing things right. And the small number of people, but in the out years, there's actually a savings. So, Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Bunn, I appreciate this kind of thinking because we talked a lot about cost shifting and where to get at the dollars because, you know, we're after cost, quality, and access. And I think this is exactly where we need to focus our energies because it is, in fact, the effective and healthful management of chronic conditions that will achieve the most financial benefit. And so I appreciate this particular section.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bunn.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and just briefly to Mr. Gottwald's remark and others in the room, I recall from the 2005 Medical Association report that they did evaluating the whole system and making recommendations that 50% of the cost in our system has to do with chronic conditions, diabetes, heart disease, et cetera. So getting a hand, many features of this bill, not just this one, are getting at those management of those chronic conditions and responding to that. Now moving to Article 3, Section 1 incorporates the legislation that originally was in House File 297, which is to establish interoperable electronic health records to basically establish a statewide goal for moving in that direction by all our healthcare providers. And then Section 2 addresses the issue of providing assistance for them to do so by making loans available for providers to move towards electronic interoperable systems. So we have both a goal to establish such records by 2012 and then also in Section 2, financial resources to assist moving us in that direction. Section 3 corresponds to portions at the beginning of Article
3. I could interrupt. Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bunn. I like Section 1, or Article whatever, Subdivision 1 on about the deadline and so on. I'm just wondering why you have to wait until 2009 instead of 2008. In the bill, as I read it, in the omnibus that's released, there's even more money for medical, for e-loans that are going to go out. And I'm, in my view, I think that we can just tell them to go do it based on what they know. The feds are not acting. They've demonstrated they're not going to act anytime soon. At least if they have a Minnesota standard, the Minnesota ones will all be interoperable for however we work if we set a standard quicker. And is there, I know Wilson Huntley and I talked about this, and it's, I'm not sure who's working on this part of it, but is there a reason it couldn't be 2008 instead of 2009 to set for a target? They could always change it if they couldn't keep it.
Well, Representative Abler, it does take time to get some of these things done. And yes, I wish it would be 2008, but this gives them another year
We'll be talking about the uniform billing shortly, which took 14 to 16 years to get done, so maybe we'll give them a year and a half on this one.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Bond.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, just so I can understand, maybe you can clarify me, I'm looking at the language. It asks for the legislature to have a report on the development standards by January 15th, 08, and then it asks for the actual standards by January 1st, 09, and it asks, obviously, for actual implementation by 2012. So which date did you want to be moved up?
Oh, if I were going to be the kind king here, I would change on line 25.4 the 9 to an 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just offsets my view, and maybe they can educate me, but these people have been meeting for a number of years,
uh-huh.
and I think very well at that, and I think that they need to sit down and make a decision. Not me. I don't know what to even tell them, but I think they know enough if they would just decide they're going to meeting in September and look at the 19 elements they want to decide on and make a decision, and so that EPIC and whoever can start making stuff to our specifications. My concern is that we're going to put out another $10, $13 million in grants and loans to hospitals and clinics that are going to have them be virtually useless or require an expensive upgrade when the standards come into place. And someone told me in the hallway that these vendors, they kind of make up whatever you kind of want. And if you want to make it some other way, that's called an upgrade to make it consistent, which is maybe a business decision. But I'm concerned that we're helping create more disharmony by our... So I think the department can lead here. I'm just saying, please lead. And I think they could decide now. So that's my only reasoning for it, and I'm not going to make it. I'm not offering an amendment now, but I'm just hoping they would move along.
Mr. Abler, if you would like to make an amendment, the author might be amenable to that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll try it then. On line 24, 25.4, I would move to strike 2009 and insert 2008. And then I probably would delete the everything after the comma on line 24 at 5.4 and 25.5 up to this period, because you won't need a report then. Okay. So that's my amendment. I'm open to other ideas of how you do that.
And this is 8.
So the point would be to make it, they would tell us by 2008 what the standards are.
Mr. Chair, I didn't know if that was going to affect 2012 too. Did you?
No, that's fine. I don't
care about 2012.
You can work on that later. And that's, but I just think that I think we'll need the time to implement whenever we get the information. And if this passes, I'll talk to you about 2012. We can move that up a year or two if you want to push everything.
So what's he moving?
So, Mr. Chair, okay. That is done as you thought it might be.
So you're, Representative Abler, you're on line 25.4. You wish to change 2009 to 2008 and then delete everything from there to the end of that subdivision?
Right. Just because it's moved.
Any discussion of that amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Thiessen.
My only question, I don't know if this is someone here, but one of the things we're trying to do is be compatible with federal efforts going forward, and I don't know where those stand and if that extra year has something to do with that.
And Mr. Chair, while you're coming, I'll tell you, we've been hearing about federal efforts as long as I've been here. So, after hearing about how CMS does their modifications with 2 years of planning for a 5-year pilot, we're all going to be old by the time we do anything on this. So.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jim Golden with the Department of Health. The timeline that is in the bill here is consistent with federal efforts at setting national standards associated with this.
Yeah.
They're being set with the CCHIT, which is the Certification Commission for Health Information Technology, and this is consistent with their timelines.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Golden, can you assure me that by that date, that there's going to be agreement, or are we going to hear that they've been delayed again?
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I don't know that they have been delayed. They have been working on this for 2 to 3 years. They have published a first set of standards for 2008. I believe it's for the inpatient activity. The 2009 is scheduled, I believe, for the ambulatory electronic health records.
Let me go off for now. Maybe I'll talk about preliminary standards and then final ones. I'll work on that for the omnibus.
Okay.
So thank you. And you can visit me, Mr. Golden. I'll be happy to work.
So thank you, Mr. Golden. And Representative Abler withdraws his amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Pepper.
I just have a clarifying question. Could you just remind me what the motion was? What is our intention with this bill? Are we hearing it again? Are we voting on it today? Are we going to have another chance for amendments?
My intent is that we will vote on this today, and it will be re-referred to the Finance Division. Finance Committee. Which is the overall Committee on Finance, which is Representative Carlson's committee.
Mr. Chair, you might also explain to Representative Pepin that the money, this is the policy language, the money is carried in the omnibus.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's no money in this bill. Lots of language, lots of good language. And it does imply that the money will be spent, but it will be spent in the other bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Thiessen.
I think we're coming up on Section 2. Maybe it's the appropriate time to actually make my amendment now.
Okay.
I got it. That's good. Okay. Well, maybe for staff. What my amendment I would propose would actually be on page 11 to strike Section 1. Because the language of the amendment you have before you has actually already made it into the bill. That's the duplication you were talking about, Representative Abler. And that is on page 25. So I guess my first amendment would be to, on page 11, to strike section 1. So lines 11, 12 through lines 12.4. We're doing the same thing twice, basically, in different sections of law. So,
did you repeat that?
Yes, it's strike lines 11.10 through 12.4.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair?
This is in the delete all, right?
Yeah, I have it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, Representative Thiessen, that you meant to say 11.10 and 11.11.
Oh, right, 11.12.
Sorry, 11.12.
Yes, 11.12 through 12.4. And basically, because we're doing that in another place as well. So this is getting rid of duplicative language.
So Representative Thiessen moves on page 11. Starting at 11.12, delete everything through 12.4. So you are leaving, Representative Thiessen, you're leaving the title, Article 2, and health care payment?
Yes.
Any discussion of that amendment? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That amendment is adopted, and we've stricken that part of the bill, which is duplicative.
Right. And then I have one more amendment.
Representative Thiessen.
And this is actually amending Section 3, which starts on page 26, but the amendment will actually be on page 28. And it will be after line 28.13, insert a new subdivision D, so it would be D in parentheses, in promulgating the rules in paragraph A, comma, and I have this for whoever needs it. The commissioner shall not require data content that is not essential to accomplish the purposes of the transactions in subdivision 1, period. So it's limiting the data that the commissioner can collect to accomplish this uniform claims. It's just language to make sure that any data they collect that accomplishes processing is limited. So I can read it again. In promulgating the rules in paragraph A, the commissioner shall not require data content that is not essential to accomplish the purpose of the transaction in subdivision 1.
So that has been moved by Representative Thiessen, and is
if folks want to just come down and say they're okay with this, that would be helpful. And Mr. Dolan, the health department is okay with this? He's nodding his head. Okay.
So, the Hospital Association and the health plans, and Representative Abler, you got a question?
Well, I'm just curious. Mr. Emmer does this kind of amendment and, you know, long, lengthy ones, and this is kind of medium length to be oral. The data discussion has been very controversial in this committee. I don't know what the amendment does. I don't know what it's protecting. And to me, it seems comfort without any substance. And maybe that's comforting somebody who wanted that. But so it would be, it'd be helpful to have them in writing. It'd also be helpful to have, if it's a data thing and people know I'm nervous about that, to let me know ahead of time. I could be better informed. So
I just found out about it, Representative, about
okay.
2 minutes before I walked in here.
All right.
I heard about it when I walked in the door there.
So maybe the these folks can
but do we,
for you.
Yeah.
Representative Abler, we've, you know, after 14 to 16 years since we walked in the door, there's been an agreement.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Please identify yourself for the tape and...
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is David Feinwachs. I'm General Counsel for the Minnesota Hospital Association. I'm here with my new best friend, Julie Bruner, from the Council of Health Plans.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Julie Bruner, Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. And Dave and I were joking that maybe you finally got the right people on the project and we found a solution here. So, Mr. Chair and members, if I could just delineate a little bit what this amendment looks like, and David, jump in at any point. Basically, the federal HIPAA law, health information, access information, portability, whatever, all right, lays out what kinds of health transactions are done or to be done electronically. What this bill does is to say, in Minnesota, we are going to have a single standard between how it is managed by the payers and by providers. And we're going to standardize all of that so that it's done in a single way. The transactions include the determinations and checking on who's eligible for benefits and what they're eligible for. The claim submission will be done in one way, and the payer will advise providers on how they are going to pay, or how they're going to, we call it remittance advice, going back to providers. So it will be standard. Now there are variations between all of the payers, which is a real frustration for providers.
Yeah, this will be a dramatic change for the healthcare system and a huge simplification. There will be no different ways to bill different insurance companies and to deal with them. It will be uniform, using as its foundation the Medicare coding system, with some additions with the help of the Health Department and the Administrative Uniformity Committee. The last amendment you heard, basically the magic here is once this is developed through rulemaking, the payers aren't allowed to change it, the providers aren't allowed to change it or customize it, and the commissioner can't use it as a vehicle to do surveys or other things unrelated to claims processing and submission. That's in a nutshell basically what this does.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, and part of the challenge from my seat here is we've heard how many bills did policy in the Finance Committee. Pretty close to a zillion, I think. And you don't know what's moving, what's going to be the action work. There was in the bill, there was a study, there was this language. and so it's hard to know which is what's real and what to even pay attention to. And so as a small provider, let me ask a couple questions. Does this apply to ERISA plans too? Are they going to then be, and which is the biggest problem for at least us little providers?
The amendment contains language defining group purchasers to include plans acting as third-party benefit administrators. So to the extent that ERISA plans are using these licensed entities, the licensed entities will be required to use only this mechanism. So in large part, the answer to your question is yes. For those plans that process their own claims, obviously, ERISA would preempt, but I don't think there's a lot of those around.
And Mr. Chair, so if you had an ERISA plan using a Wisconsin entity, they wouldn't have to do this either then, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so at least it's a good start, and I appreciate all that. Is there going to be a cost to providers to do this, and is there assistance, like in the software? We have software that we bought that we print out the different forms on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, most providers are now billing Medicare and are familiar with the Medicare system. So by and large, what changes occur, I don't think will be dramatic. There is specific language that prohibits payers from assessing a cost to providers for either using the new system or transmitting the data electronically.
Mr. I'm trying to be practical here and short, but I just need to know a couple of things. There's been some proponents of electronic billing that have a third, have a middle person that they bill to, then they do the billing. This would be direct billing then to the, so there'd be no middleman anymore that we'd have to pay a per claim fee to. Is that correct?
Mr. Feinrod.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, this does not preclude if someone wants to use the so-called middleman or, you know, claim scrubber or the, you know, the clearinghouse kind of concept, but it will be possible with this system to deal directly, to log onto a website and simply submit your claim.
And so the bill says that for those, if you want to do each individual carrier, you could do that, and there's no additional fee then, which is, I'm sure, a good thing for you, so they could go right direct.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, as best I understand this, I think it's a good idea. I'll be looking at it some more, and then I'm happy for uniformity. You have no idea how many, as a small provider, you know, we have a few staff, and it's always a challenge, and so I think this is a real positive step. Thank you. Thanks for bringing it.
Mr. Chair, members, if I can add, there was an offer on the part of the HIPAA Collaborative to create sort of the portal to take for small providers to use to enter claims through that. So there's some discussion on the part of the HIPAA Collaborative to establish that as well for small providers.
I have one more question for the oral amendment, which I have the essence of. Representative Thiessen, who decides essential? Is that the
Representative Thiessen?
Language that was given to me.
I understand.
Besides essential in his amendment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, the reference to essential was to sort of narrow the data collection to the task of claim submission and payment and eligibility determination, and to prevent this from becoming a vehicle for other kinds of information survey which would clog it up and which would make life more difficult for providers and payers. So I don't think there's anything magic about it. It just conveys that, you know, We're only going to collect the data necessary to do this job.
And Mr. Chair, maybe I'll ask up some teeth and stay on the floor just to define essential so we can get it on the legislative record so people know what we intend. And at least they'll get the essence for future reference. Thank you very much.
So, Representative Thiessen.
I guess the only thing more I'd like to say is this has really been an effort of the Department of Health and the Governor's Office and the providers and the plan. So thank you, everybody, for working so hard on this. It's hopefully signs of things to come, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Any further discussion of the Thiessen Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? And I'd like to thank Ms. Bruner and Mr. Feinlox for, I think this is the biggest thing that's happened in years. And for those that don't know, in the United States, about a third of the healthcare dollars spent on administration, compared to about 16% in the rest of the world. And this is a step to get us approaching the rest of the world, and it's a huge change. And actually, it was the governor. When was that, August, that you went to Utah?
December.
Yeah. Okay, Representative Bunn.
Yes, Chair Thiessen and members, and back to the changes in the bill. Representative Huntley or Thiessen, would you like to comment on Section 4 here on the Merck distribution changes? That's from 1875.
Representative Bunn, I think this is the basically the governor's language, mm-hmm. and how he distributes the money. I think the difference is going to be he took some money out of the Health Care Access Fund, and in the other bill where this distribution takes place, the we do not use the health care, or will not use the health care access fund for this. Mm-hmm. But it's basically the governor's distribution scheme, and I believe that's different than what's in the Senate bill. Mm-hmm. And
again, for members in the audience, this is
Representative Liebling. Does this relate to your bill, the distribution of the MERS money?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, and for members of the audience, this is funds for medical education funds. These are to support our interns and residents at our teaching hospitals in the state. And as he just indicated, we're pretty much using the governor's language for this portion. The main difference being that, and this is not true of just of this legislation, but our entire health care omnibus package, is that we are ensuring that health care access funds be used for health care purposes, and won't be using those funds for this one. Section 5, newly added, has to do with some changes to the hospital information performance reporting. The hospital report card, I think it's referred to in Santa Norman Clinker, just adding some changes to that on the report card. The
Chair? Yeah. I'm sorry, Representative Bunn, would you mind going through, perhaps listing the page? I'm having a really hard time following what section you're on. If you just say the page on the bottom, too.
It's my copy changed from tonight till last night till this morning, so I want to make sure I get it right for you. Okay. This section I just referred to, Section 5, on your delete all, starts with the very last line of page 29 and then continues on the next phase page until line 30.22. And as you will see, the additional language added to the hospital reporting is on line 30.4 to 30.10.
Representative Gallo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I'm just wondering, under Subdivision 1 required information, I notice the organizations identified, and this is perhaps for my education, do the Centers for Disease Control collect any of this data? Would they be another place that we'd want to tap into, or is, I don't know.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald, I am under the impression that the disease control does collect information nationally, some of related to infectious disease, obviously, and that maybe the department could comment on this one in particular in terms of what the difference is between what's going to be collected here and what is currently collected on a national basis. I think the department is involved in another conversation currently, though.
We could, Mr. Golden, or, oh, I'm going to get Scott Lights.
I guess I was the one who took the step forward.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, two questions. I'm not aware that right now the information is uniformly reported in this manner on hospital-acquired infections in Minnesota.
And Mr. Weitz, would you give us your name for the tape?
I apologize, Mr. Chair. Chair and member of this committee, for the record, my name is Scott Leitz with the Health Department.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Regarding Section 6, with regards to the Healthcare Transportation Task Force.
Transformation.
I think transportation is not. We had a lot of discussions of transportation last week, so including last night. In any event, I draw your attention to it. It was in the original bill that you've seen previously, but the language has been changed. So I want to highlight how the Transformation Task Force is currently designed. First of all, we all feel, as I said, many components of this legislation, which drew on the governor, the Senate, the House, outside organizations have been working on these issues. We now have wording to suggest that the governor shall convene this task force. Obviously, all these parties need to be at the table to move our state forward in the next several years. The wording of the makeup of the commission is left a little broader than it was previously. It has four legislators from each the House and the Senate, half a minority, half majority. This is a bipartisan initiative. Has in line 30.30 four representatives of the governor and state agencies appointed by the governor. And then 30.31, at least four persons appointed by the governor who have demonstrated leadership in health organizations, health improvement initiatives, healthcare trade or professional associations, or other collaborative healthcare improvement activities and initiatives. And then the final one is at least two persons appointed by the governor who have demonstrated leadership in employer and group purchaser activities related to health system improvement, at least one of which must be from a labor organization.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn. I'm fairly comfortable with the makeup of the task force. I'm wondering, are there any consumer representatives that we would want on this transformation task force? That's the one piece I'm seeing that's not on this list.
Representative Bond.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Gottwald, we had moved to kind of greater leeway in the categories. Many different people expressed issues in the last few weeks about this portion of the bill. But also, it would be contained under 30.31, item number 3, four persons demonstrated leadership, healthcare organizations, health improvement initiatives. I am assuming that would include, under healthcare improvement initiatives, consumer-based organizations. But certainly we could, if you want it further specified, I'd be open to an amendment along those lines.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Abler.
Oh, got one
first. Okay, Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn. I'm not sure the language I'd be looking for, but I think it would be good to have that explicit in here. I think it would be good to have that perspective represented in this transformation task force. Maybe I could work with you on that. Or
Representative Bunn, I think there's another problem on line 3029. I received a message from the speaker about another bill and a group that was being appointed, and apparently, I think, according to House rules, everybody gets appointed by the Speaker, not the minority leader. So that may have to change, but we can leave that there for the time being.
Representative Abler. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gottwald and Bunn. As this moves along, I assure you the Senate will have some ideas about how to improve this group. But I think that, and so you maybe don't want to fix it too tightly because they will certainly add consumers. And many other people you never even thought you'd want to have on the group. But I want to commend you. This is actually a well-balanced group, and you don't want to have it to be where it comes down to a vote of 12 to 9 or something. You want it to be like a couple outliers, and most of them have a consensus. And I think you've assembled the kind of group that could do that. And because they have to, there's a lot of push and pull on this that'll happen and ought to. So I think it's a good job.
Yeah, if I could just comment, some of us have talked to the governor twice now, I think, and some of his staff people, and we're negotiating back and forth about what the precise nature of this task force is going to be. So, but I think it's a great idea, and I happen to love the word transformation. Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair, regarding your points about line 30.28 and who can appoint, is your point only regarding the House side? That's not true of the Senate?
It's my understanding, and I don't think I'm not absolutely certain, but I think the Speaker appoints everybody. The Senate has different rules than we do, and so that may have to change. We could certainly do that in the Finance Division or Finance Committee.
Well, I'll leave it up to you, Mr. Chair. If you'd like staff to work out some language to amend that today, that would be fine. Otherwise, I'll leave it to you to decide for further amendment later.
I don't think we need to worry about it. And I will say that almost always the Speaker consults with the Minority Leader and
Mr. Chair
makes the appointments the way the Minority Leader wants, but the rules are the rules.
Mr. By the way, that's Trump's House rules, so... that would be an interesting dualism that this moves ahead.
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair and members, moving to Section 7, which begins...
Oh, Representative Barad, you had a question?
Mr. Chairman, I do. I guess I just before we move on to the next section, Representative Bunn, can you tell me, why would you specify Subdivision 5? Isn't that essentially already taken care of in regards to making sure that folks have access to health care and in terms of the action plans that have been set forward? Why would you separate out that Minnesota Care piece for small employers?
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, during this session, legislation was brought forward by Representative Murphy, I believe, to propose this option for small employers. I think it was my and other people's views that while we weren't convinced that we should move to this immediately, that it was an idea worth exploring further. And so the language that's included here is to give it as to one thing that this task force would look at would be to further explore the issue, convert that to a study as part of the larger goal of this task force as opposed to moving in that direction at this time.
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I know I spoke against this one. Representative Murphy brought it up because of some of the drawbacks of Minnesota Care in a small employer application. And I realize it's late to be thinking about retooling this, but I've always envisioned this effort on small employers as being more trying to find out what it is that meets the needs of the small employers and offering some variety there. You know, we go back to the small employer insurance reform days and the products that were required for health plans to do business in Minnesota ended up not being popular because of that very thing. We studied it, we put them together, we were all required to file them. And small employers didn't embrace them because we missed the fact that they weren't going to meet the needs of small employers. So I'm wondering if somehow this element could eventually be crafted into something a little more broad to say, what is it that small employers need? How can we deliver it either through the private marketplace or also through public programs if necessary? And I know there have been many attempts at that, but that would seem to me to address that need more than just focusing on how we shoehorn Minnesota Care into a small employer application.
Representative Bunn, did you have a response?
Representative Huntley and Representative Gottwald, just briefly, I see this and why I felt it was appropriate to include here. It's just, I think there's several things in this bill attempting to move us in the direction of addressing the small employer needs. The exchange, the 125 to make use of the pre-tax income, the thing in the next section you'll see in terms of small employers who are farmers, and that I would hope that task force would consider this in light of all those options of using exchange in some way to address the need, using 125 to address the need, and other options before them as they move forward, and just to put on the table as one of the ways we might fill this gap among the others. So.
Members, the Senate bill does have a major buy-in of employers into Minnesota Care. We do not have that in our bill at this time. And Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bunn, I have a question on that Section 2, Subdivision 5, Section 4, 32.24. So it specifies that employers who have not provided employer-subsidized health coverage as an employee benefit during the past 12 months would qualify potentially. To me, this seems like that gives them a pretty easy out not to provide employer-sponsored health coverage. And I'm questioning why we'd want to go in the direction of asking our employers to provide some coverage. I guess I'm having a hard time understanding why we as a state would want to go in that direction, because it seems to me like this would... this would move away from what we would actually like them to do.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bunn.
Representative Chair Huntley and Representative Heffin. I read the inclusion of this part to try to achieve just the opposite, that you would not want to encourage small employers to
drop their, you know, private health care they've been having immediately to then try to enter a Minnesota care system that might become available. And so this is to discourage that shifting from going on if we were to go this direction. I think that given that this is now in the form of study, that they should be looking at all those features and making a recommendation if we were to go this direction at all.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonn, and I appreciate that this is just a study, but I would have to say in my reading of this, it would do the exact opposite of your intent. If the employer have not provided employer-subsidized health coverage as an employee benefit during the previous 12 months, then they would qualify. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that just encourage people not to offer it then? I don't understand what would be the motivation. If you're trying to keep employers responsible for health care coverage, why would we want to give them an out to not have to do that? To me, this would be exactly the opposite of what the goal would be.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I don't understand that language.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pepin.
Representative Pepin, I was referring to those who already have some kind of, what this is addressing is for those employers who have offered some health care, okay, it would not encourage them to shift to this option, because if they were to shift, they'd have to uninsure the employees for 12 months. You're referring to those employers who maybe have never offered health insurance for the employees, and therefore this would discourage them from offering it and using this option as a possibility. That would be my understanding of what the difference between my answer and what you were asking. I agree with you that we need to encourage employers of all sizes to offer health care. This particular feature is to discourage people from who already have been offering it to try to go this direction as a cheaper option via government, and which is, as we all know, the Minnesota Care with the $10,000 cap, you know, hospital cap, I think is not really an option we really want to encourage a lot of people to have in small business. So, in its current form. So, I think that's what others, if others on the committee would like to address that, or well, the author originally, that would be fine.
That is precisely what you're trying to do, is stop an employer that's offering health insurance to its employees from saying, oh, why don't we just, I'll drop my program, you can all go on Minnesota Care, because it's subsidized, so I won't have to pay anything and you'll get cheaper health insurance. So the intent there is to prevent employers from doing that. And Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is, from my reading of it, kind of going counter to what the governor's perspective is on the connector, on looking at other states. There's a competition between growing Minnesota Care and going through a connector as two competing directions for health care reform. I think both have significant merit. But this marries the two in a way that I think will create conflict for the bill, which I think is a great bill. But I think it might create some bumps down the road in the process that we're starting to see here in the committee. So I would move to make an amendment to remove this section.
Representative Dean moves to delete on page 32 subdivision 5. Any discussion of that?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I was going to offer a comment before, and maybe I'll speak to the amendment. Maybe I'll suggest that the amendment's modified. But to the question of small employers, if you look back on page 31, I mean, you do have a very broad study. You talk about on 31.26, you talk about proposed actions that will slow the rate of increase, which is very important to small employers. On 31.30, you talk about actions that will increase the affordable health nature and whatever, for uninsured and insured and underinsured or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those are very, very broad. And then you have this specific thing. And by the way, here's some details of the thing we like to study. It does not exactly fit. Perhaps the middle ground here, and I understand why the author likes it in there, because it's nice to see it there. And then they'll look at your specific proposal, but it is very specific compared to the rest of it. Perhaps the answer might be, in terms of keeping the breadth of the study, if you retain the first sentence on line 32.13-15 and have them look at that, and maybe they would come back with a way that makes sense given the context of the work. This is going to be massive work they're doing, and it may make no sense whatsoever to spend the time you're requiring them to look at this whereas that one sentence would be, they could look at that as the rest of their stuff. And maybe if it's friendly to the committee, that would be I would offer that as an amendment to the amendment, or you can talk about the whole thing.
So Representative Abler, you're just talking about just deleting
everything
after the bold print, leave that in there, but then say...
it'd be most of the Dean Amendment. I would just strike after 3215, after the period, the rest of that paragraph, the rest of that section, from 3215 down to 3227, just to suggest that retains the essence of what you want and keeps the breadth of it. And it's probably a nuance anyway. That's my suggestion.
Representative Dean, do you have any thoughts on the Haber proposal to change your amendment?
I guess, Mr. Chair, I would see that this as the Minnesota Care direction that Representative Murphy is proposing is a valid proposal. I think that it is going in one direction, but this bill is going in a different direction. So I think that it would create more harm than good to keep it in. So I would move to keep the entirety of the section out.
Well, Representative Abler, do you wish to modify?
Okay.
Well, let's vote. Any further discussion on Representative Leadway?
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Okay, there'll be a roll call. Any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn, is there anything in the task force, if you take Section 5 out, that does not allow the task force to assess the needs of small businesses?
In Subdivision 5.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, no.
Thank you.
He's just going to delete the whole. Section 5.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Broad.
She answered my question.
Oh, okay.
She asked whether there is, if you took this out, whether there's any reason the task force would not already be able to address the small needs of small businesses in its work, and I said no.
Representative Erickson, I think you were next.
Mr. Chair, I'll pass. My question was answered.
Okay. Representative Gottwald, did you have a question? Was there somebody over here? Representative Hodge.
Mr. Chair, could you clarify what we are voting on?
Okay, we are voting the Dean amendment is to delete lines 3213 through 3227, and then I guess we don't have to renumber after that. So just delete those lines. Any further discussion of that?
Huntley.
No.
I had my hand up.
I can't hear you. Oh, there's Representative Bunn. The one place I wasn't looking.
I just wanted to comment that in terms of the exchange currently, how it's set up in the legislation, employers with 11 employees or more would be required to establish 125 plans to make use of pre-tax dollars. So in terms of what the exchange would provide information to individuals in terms of making their way through that private individual purchase market in terms of purchasing insurance. In terms of employers with under 11 employees, it really isn't addressing their needs yet. So in terms of what I view as one possible reason, you know, we should be looking at, this is one other option, is for that subgroup, which is currently not addressed by the exchange effectively in terms of providing affordable coverage. So there is a gap still, even with 125s for employers with very small numbers of employees.
Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Huntley.
No.
Abler.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Broad.
Yes.
Bunn.
Yes.
Is that a pass?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, she passed.
I thought, okay. Am I allowed to do that, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Never passed before. Dean, be the will.
Here you can.
I'm sorry. Erickson.
Yes.
Fritz.
No.
Gottwald.
Yes.
Hosh.
No.
Liebling.
No.
Loeffler.
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Rude?
No.
Slawick? Tell?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Walker?
The amendment fails. Vote was 11 to 7.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I'm not offering an amendment now, but I think I'll just chat with the author. And here's my, again, for the same points about being very broad. And actually, if you look at the way the language is written, they can only study this very narrow slice of how you would do Minnesota Care. And so I think maybe we'll work on that and talk about it for Friday.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have an amendment as well. If we want to really get to options for small employers, and if we want to designate this task force that they should be doing that, I don't think we should be limiting the task force to just looking at Minnesota Care for small employers. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move on line 32.13. I would move to strike. This is going to be a little cumbersome, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I would move to strike Minnesota Care, and I would capitalize the O in option and add an S. And then on line 32.14, I would strike the words, the feasibility of creating A, and I would insert the word after on, options for serving. And then on line 32.15, I would add an S after employer and strike the rest of the section.
Representative Broad moves to, on line 32.13, strike the words Minnesota Care, capitalize option and make it plural, options. Then on line 32.14, strike the feasibility of creating A and insert options for serving. And then on line 32.15, make a plural out of employers and strike the buy-in option to Minnesota Care. So basically it says, if I interpret this right, that the task force will study a variety of options for small employers, but does not reference Minnesota Care.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly my intent. I think if we want to help this group, which I agree that we really should be getting at, and I think that there's strong agreement around that, we shouldn't be setting forth the way that they shall be served in this legislation. We ought to give the task force the ability to do their job.
Any further discussion of that amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I'll call a roll call, please.
And it's been a roll call. Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good amendment. I think we should go in this direction.
Mr. Chun.
Mr. Chair, there should also probably be another conforming change made on line 32.25. If you do want to keep the language about the 12 months, it should be read 12 months, period, and get rid of the comma and everything else on that line, which is a reference to Minnesota Care.
What? So, Representative Broad, I assume you will accept that.
Yeah. And, Mr. Chair, I guess one other technical change on line 32.19 should delete according to subdivision
Mr.
4.
Chair? Was Mr. Broad? I thought the amendment was to strike all the language.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chun. That's right.
Wait a minute. What? Oh. So, Representative Broad, let me get this straight there. Did you intend to strike everything after employers on line 32.15? So the rest of that whole subdivision is history.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bond.
I'm just wondering whether on line 32.14, after on the options for serving, it doesn't say what types of options, like it doesn't say related to health care coverage, whether we need to have that there at all. also possibly words like on the options for health care coverage or something like that. Maybe that's just covering the context of the overall thing. But
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bunn, it's within the task force, so the guiding the guiding parts of the task force would accomplish that, I believe, and it wouldn't. I don't think that would be necessary.
Representative Leland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think as Representative Broad's amendment reads, we've got options for serving small employers, but not anything explicitly about serving their employees. And I wonder if she would be willing to add the language after small employers to say, and their employees.
Representative Broad has incorporated that, and so it would read on line 3215, small employers and their employees. And Representative Thiessen.
No, Representative
Broad. Rothler.
Mr. Chair and members, as long as we're going to have the task force looking at all the issues of access to affordable coverage, I'd like to suggest that we add in the self-employed individuals, because I have a lot of people in my district. I suspect everyone here has people who are self-employed who don't have access to group efforts. And so this is a broad study, I would say, options for small employers and their employees and self-employed individuals. And then we're looking at the entire market and how to make it work for everyone.
Mr. Chairman, I'll incorporate that.
So it would now read, starting on line 3213, options for small employers, and then it would read that the task force shall study and report back to the legislature by December 15, 2008 on options for serving small employers and their employees and self-employed individuals. And then everything else in that subdivision would be stricken. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, that sounds like a fantastic amendment, and I encourage the committee's support.
Mr. Chair, can we have a roll call?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, let's have a roll call. I'd like to actually have something on record that I got all sorts of support on this.
You do want a roll call? Okay. Okay.
Goodbye, our roll call.
Call the roll, please.
Huntley.
No.
Abler.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Broad.
Yes.
Bunn.
Yes.
Dean.
Yes.
Erickson.
Yes.
Fritz.
Yes.
Gottwald.
Yes.
Hosh.
Yes.
Liebling.
No.
Loeffler.
Yes.
Murphy.
Yes.
Watrumba.
Yes.
Pepin.
Yes.
Peterson. Rude.
Yes.
Slowick. Towel.
No.
No. Thiessen.
Yeah.
Walker.
The amendment carries, I believe it's 16 to 4. Which it does. So the amendment is adopted. Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, I also have questions on this page. I don't know if it would be appropriate before Representative Bunn further carried on with the description of the bill. I had some questions on Subdivision 11.
I hadn't gotten to that yet.
You, Representative Bunn, you just want to, you're only one page from the, finishing the amendment, so why don't you just describe the rest of the bill, and then we'll come back to that.
Mr. Chair and members, the next section to which Representative Pepin refers is we considered in committee a bill that changes the language regarding dependents who are eligible for health care under their family plans, their parents' plans. Previously in the law, if I recall correctly from our discussion in the committee, dependents were eligible up to the age of 25 if they were enrolled as students. And as described in our testimony in this committee previously, that created a number of problems with people who got sick and dropped out for a semester or who were on an internship for away and various other kinds of things when there was a break in their educational experience, that people would lose their health coverage. And so this portion of the bill is that dependents would be covered or could be covered under their parents or their family plans up to age 25, regardless of their enrollment in educational institution.
Representative Pepin. Well, why don't we just finish the bill? Representative Liebling, did you want to comment on this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to...
I just back up. As long as we're on this issue, why don't we deal with it right now? So we're dealing with page 32, subdivision 11. And Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wanted to back up even a little bit more. I'm still back on the last amendment that we did, and I wanted to offer another oral amendment to the Section 5 as it's been amended by Representative Broad. And at the end of that sentence, where it now says, and self-employed individuals, I would move to amend it to put a comma there and say, including the option of a buy-in to Minnesota Care.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment for that amendment then. I'd like to include...
Well, wait a minute now. Yeah. Let me get this. So Representative Liebling is adding before the period where there's would currently be a period on self-employed individuals, there would now read, including the option of a buy-in into Minnesota Care. Representative Broad.
First of all, Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Representative Bunn. Is there anything in the bill, if we don't include Representative Liebling's language, that does not allow the task force to consider the option of Minnesota Care for those individuals?
Representative Bunn.
I would, Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I would expect not, that everything would be available to them. But as you know, there are individuals in this committee and the author of the original bill themselves, I'm sure that would like to make sure it is included as an option.
Mr. Chairman, and
Broad.
Just note that, I mean, the whole purpose of the amendment that we just did was to make sure that the options were not set forth. And I think what Representative Liebling's language does is that it again prioritizes a certain type of health care, a provision of health care in this bill, which is exactly what everybody, 16 members of this committee, decided not to do. So I hope that we would potentially, I mean, if we're going to go say including the option of Minnesota Care, I would move to amend that amendment and add and private market solutions.
So there's been the Broad Amendment would then, after the Liebling Amendment, says including the option of a buy-in into Minnesota Care, and the Broad Amendment would add to that and private sector options? Is that what?
Private market solutions.
Okay, and private market. Okay, so that's been incorporated into the Liebling Amendment. Is there anybody else? Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, speaking to the original and as amended amendment, we're muddying the waters. We purposely crafted the language the way we did to leave the options open. I think I get very concerned when we have commissions or study groups that have their hands tied in any particular direction, especially in this case where we really want them to explore all options and pick the best one or two or three or whatever they come up with, to start putting in explicit line. We could go on with that endlessly. And so now as the commission gathers, they're going to have to look and say, well, what was intended by that? And we start tying their hands and directing their focus more so than we intend. I think we wanted to keep the options open. And so I would speak against the amended amendment. Let's leave it open and let this commission, without its hands being tied or being pre-directed, to take a look and recommend the best solution.
So we have the... Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, why don't we say that I completely agree with Representative Gottwald. I don't see any exclusionary provisions with the original language as it is, and it just seems like we're complicating this with verbiage that's not needed. Minnesota Care and Private Market Solutions, and I think would have been covered by this task force as it is. And personally, I'd like to move on and discuss the last three-fourths of a page of this bill. Just one minute.
Mr.
Chairman, maybe Mr. Chun can tell me, are we excluding anybody with these two new language pieces? Because I, too, agree with both Representative Hosh and Representative Gottwald that we should have just left it alone. But I want to make sure that if we're going to put priorities in place, that they're including everybody. Do Private Market Solutions and Minnesota Care cover all options available?
Mr. Chun.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I mean, I think that the original language, when it says options for serving small employers and other groups, it just leaves it open to the task force. And whether or not the committee wants to emphasize certain things, I think is up for the committee to decide.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope that the members of the committee would not support the Liebling Amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to get into this discussion. However, I guess I'm going to have to agree with the folks that have spoke just prior to me because we did not include single payer. And so unless we're going to include single payer, I don't think you should be going down that way.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. when I ran for office, it was really about reforming health care. That was my initial impulse. And small employers have been left out of the market for a really long time, and I'm glad that they're getting some attention here today. And I do think they need to be a part of the study, and I supported the Broad Amendment because I think it is good to look at all of the options. We haven't found a solution yet in the private market, not one that they're gravitating to. And I'm a little skeptical about finding a private market solution. But I have promised people here and in my district that I'm going to be open-minded about the solution. And this is a really important issue that we're talking about because there's a segment of people who want to innovate for Minnesota. They're an important part of our economy, and they are having a hard time competing because we haven't found a solution here. So I think we should stop diddling around and move on. Let's, resolve this problem we've got here today and then get to the real work of the commission in the summer, where the work is really going to happen. Thank you.
Mr. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, since Representative Murphy is the author of this bill and she feels comfortable that the Minnesota option, Minnesota Care option, will be studied as part of this, that I will withdraw my amendment.
The amendment is withdrawn. Any further discussion on Subdivision 5?
No, I'm fully informed on that subdivision.
Okay, Representative Tappan, you had a question on another item.
Thank you, Chair Huntley and Representative Bunn. I wanted to get back to Subdivision 11, the definition of dependent. You talked about it a little bit, and you talked about part of the reason you wanted to move it from 19 to 25 was because in case someone, delayed college for a year or two or whatever. But to me, if you're eliminating the encouragement, the lines 32.31, who is a full-time student as defined, to me, that just seems like we're not encouraging school. I would call it the couch potato change. We're encouraging people to be couch potatoes. 19 to 25 isn't a semester or two. That's about 16 semesters or more. And I guess I would have a couple questions for staff. And I'm sure it's laid out on a spreadsheet or something. But I'm wondering what that additional change would cost. And then also, on 33.1, I'm looking at it. I want to make sure if I understand this correctly. For the purpose of this definition, a child includes a child whom the employee of the employee's spouse has been appointed legal guardian and an adoptive child. So could I be a perfectly mentally capable individual who is unmarried and 24, but a legal guardian of someone else and therefore be a dependent on Minnesota Care?
that legal guardian definition for me. Can I be, if I'm of sound mind and I'm 24, am I actually a legal guardian, of my parents or of another adult? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Madam Chair, Representative Peppin, is your question about whether or not a person...
Are you not emancipated when you're 18? I don't really understand the language. If I'm a person of that does not have a disability, am I not emancipated? Can I be 22 years old and be...
Madam Chair, Representative Peppin, I'm thinking that last sentence probably is talking about or giving the status of... giving adopted children the status of a child.
Sorry, I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
I believe that last sentence is basically clarifying that when a child is adopted, and you know the child has a legal guardian, that the child that the person is considered a child for purposes of the
under. But with the change, would that not be a child under the age of 25? Because in the original definition of how Representative Bunn wants to change it, it says an unmarried child who is under the age of 25. And this is still part of the same section. This is still part of the same definition. So that would mean that if I'm a child of someone, if I'm 24 years old, someone else could have legal guardianship over me. But I don't want to, I think the wording is poor there, but I won't go into that further. I think it's silly language, but I guess I'll concentrate on the cost. How much would that cost, Mr. Chun? Do you have any information on moving that language from 19 or 25? Do you have any estimates?
No, I might be able to. Actually, on one hand, there might be a savings because some of these people might be end up on medical assistance, which we would pay for. On the other hand, I have heard, but I'm not absolutely sure, that Dewar has put a fiscal note on this idea because it would make a number of descendants of state employees who are not currently eligible to be covered, so there is a fiscal note on this part for... doer. On the other hand, we're not carrying any money in this bill, so you can look at it either way. Representative Gottwald, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, is there anyone from Doer who could comment on that? Because I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair, I think.
There's somebody from Doer.
Mr. Chair, before we...
Let's hear from the gentleman from Dewar, and then we're going to hear from Representative Loeffler.
Hi, Mr. Chair and committee members. I don't have the exact fiscal note in front of me, but I do believe it's about $6 million in order to incorporate dependents up through age 25 that are not of student status into the state employee group insurance program. And for the record, my name is Nathan Morocco, and I'm the manager for the State Employee Group Insurance Program.
Representative Loeffler, you've been waiting a long time.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment on this, though.
Mr. Chair, this deals with the bill that I presented to the Policy Committee and to the Commerce Committee, so maybe I can assist in sort of addressing some of the concerns here, because some of you weren't able to hear the testimony. This provision impacts... dependents. So first of all, you have to make the standard of being a dependent. And then what the testimony that we heard was that there's lots of people who run into situations where they're not taking a full-time load or they're in between graduation and a job and there's a gap in coverage that it's very hard to get short-term undefined and coverage for these dependents before they get coverage. The testimony we had from the health plans was that for small group, most small group businesses and bidding, they don't charge for additional dependents. Many of them, it's up to three. There's a few plans that have up to three that exceed dependent on family size. It wouldn't affect the individual market. For self-insured plans like the state, We've heard that Dewar believes there's a cost because this would bring some additional people in. Less than 25% of our college students graduate in 4 years, which is unfortunately the circumstance that we're facing right now. And we heard from people who don't meet the disability standard in law right now, who Mary Ellen Otremba testified to a student in her area who broke her leg and couldn't stay as a student in her nursing program. And so you end up with a lot of people who end up with gaps, and this is gap coverage.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Chair Huntley. Mr. Morocco, the $6 million, was that annual or biannual, or what was that cost?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, that was an annual cost to the program.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I would like to offer an amendment to strike the language and go back to the original language on lines, strike the new language, 32.30 to 32.32. And I just want everybody to be clear that would, by voting yes to my amendment, would save $12 million over the biennium. So, and I would like a roll call on that.
We can just make the section.
Yeah, just if what you want to do is strike subdivision 11.
Correct. That would be fine.
And we're going to have to move along here, so...
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think there's been a misunderstanding here in terms of understanding both how this would work and also whether there's a cost involved. Someone does not automatically become a dependent when they're over 18. As you said, they're emancipated. You and your family would have to claim them as a dependent if they were over 18, in a sense. Therefore, in terms of the Dewar, Ms. Morocco?
Yeah.
In terms of the Dewar estimate, that estimate is based on if every child connected to employee 18 to 25 then joined on to their parents' health plans. That would only happen if, whether you were in a government employee or whether you were an employer employee, if the parents in this case, or the parent, decided to bring their 18 to 25-year-old on to their health plan as a dependent. That's my understanding of the situation. It's not an automatic thing. You as a parent would determine whether you were still paying for your child living with you or in your home or whether why they're in school or whatever, and therefore they were a dependent for tax and other purposes. So this is not saying every person from 18 to 25 is now going to be covered under family plans or state plans. If they are still a dependent, they would have that option. That's my understanding, unless someone corrects me otherwise.
Mr. Morocco, if you want to comment briefly, and then we're going to have to move to a vote.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative and Committee, when we did our estimate, we had assumed that because we have two tiers, we have single coverage and family coverage, if somebody was under the age of 25, that there wouldn't be any reason to not cover them, either as primary or secondary coverage. There's sort of basically nothing to lose by enrolling them in our program. Other programs, and certainly others can testify, that might be of a more tiered structure would be allowed to create premium differentials where we would not. So we would be collecting essentially the same amount of premium but still incurring the costs, whether it be a primary cost or secondary coverage cost for the dependents, and that's what our fiscal net was based on.
Representative Loeffler.
To Mr. Morocco, my understanding is that our current family insurance coverage under CGIP is not based on the number of children that are covered. Is that correct, that whether you're a family of two or you're a family of four, that you pay the same amount?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is true. There's just a straight, basically, family premium rate, regardless if you have just a spouse or if you have a spouse and 10 children, your rate as an employee would be the same.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't believe that, and I have not seen the detail of any fiscal note, and I'm the author of this, so I am just learning the information I would like to have gotten earlier, but my understanding is that this, for most people with family coverage, this will not increase the state cost, and you still have to be able to declare that person a dependent, that you are providing, you know, assistance to them. It's not that many additional lives, I think, that you're basing this on.
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative and Committee, as a self-insured group, really the premium is a reflection of your overall claims experience. So although to the individual employee, there would not be an increased cost, however, the cost to the group as a whole will go up, and then we will then subsequently we will redefer those costs out to everyone during the following year when we reassess what the premium needs to be to pay for the increased costs.
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Morocco or others, to address Representative Pepin's issues again, if I am a 21 or 22-year-old, I've graduated from college, I am in a job, I have health care benefits, but my parents are, or parent or a state employee, I am assuming that they are not claiming me as a dependent in any way for the purposes of acquiring different or alternative insurance now on their policy, this program. I am independent of my family, and therefore to assume that all 18 to 25-year-olds now become dependents for the purposes of being added to the state system to me seems an incorrect assumption to a very large incorrect assumption in terms of how this actually works.
Representative Otremba, you're going to get the final word on this amendment, and then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is what are the dollars that are already being spent from 18 to 25 years old?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Fun.
Do you mean for state employees, or do you mean in general?
Mr. Chair, you said that there was a fiscal note of $6 million. How much of that is the dollars that are already being spent on 18 to 25-year-olds on the state health plan?
Mr. Morocco, if you can answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure that I understand the question. Do you mean what percentage of our overall expenditures go towards this kind of population?
Well,
Representative Tremba.
Mr. Chair, you have on your fiscal note said that all children 18 to 25 would be $6 million. How much would it be if you looked at who already is taking our you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, that is the additional cost. We already know. We think that will be the additional cost by adding the dependents. It doesn't include dependents that are already on the system for the state employee group insurance program. So that would be the cost of adding additional dependents based on our current population.
Okay.
No.
We're now going to vote on the Pepin amendment, which she just amends to include also line 32.28. So we would delete, if we approve this amendment, 32.28 through 33.3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Mr.
Huntley, I asked for a roll call.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And clarify that. What did you say it was, 32.33? I thought we made the amendment for the whole section, which would be 33.2. Oh, yeah, I see. The effective date. Okay, that's fine. But can we do a roll call?
Yep. Call the roll, please.
Huntley.
No.
Abler.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Broad.
Yes.
Bunn.
Yes.
Dean.
No.
Erickson.
Yes.
Fritz.
No.
Gottwald.
Yes.
Hosh.
No.
Liebling.
No.
Loeffler.
No.
Murphy.
No.
Otremba.
No.
Pepin.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Rude.
No.
Slowick. Howe.
No.
Thiessen.
No.
Walker.
Mr. Chair, I misspoke. I was distracted by something I was about to think about doing. I meant no. I said yes. My vote is no.
Okay. Representative Bonner, I usually write down on a piece of paper how what I'm supposed to say. When you get in the middle of it, you forget. The vote is 5 in favor, 14 opposed. The amendment fails. Representative Bond, do you want to describe the last section of your bill very briefly? And that would be Section 8.
Okay.
This is the Tremba bill, I believe.
Yes, Chair Huntley and members. First one last comment on our previous discussion in that I hope to check into the legal issues surrounding that dependent status issue in the next couple days to establish whether my comment about the false assumptions in the fiscal statement were accurate or not. We are now on the last section of the bill, Section 8, and this is a section by changing the state depreciation language in state tax law regarding depreciation to be in conformity with federal law would make more self-employed Minnesota farmers eligible for Minnesota Care if they so choose to pursue that. So again, it's an issue about allowing that option for more individuals if they chose to pursue that. This was a bill brought forward by Representative Tremba, and that was passed in previous committees.
Any discussion of that? This does have a fiscal note, but the fiscal part of this will be carried in the bigger bill. And Mary Ellen, what was her Representative Tremba? We're getting late.
Mr. Chair.
What was the fiscal note, just so people would know? It's $974,000 in the first biennium and $2 million in the second. Any discussion of this amendment? All right, this is part of the bill. If not, any discussion of the bill as a whole? Seeing none, Representative Bunn renews her motion that House File 1873 be recommended to pass and referred to the overall Finance Committee as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
I think the ayes have it. Representative Bunn.
One last comment for members before we go on in terms of them looking at it further this week. On the handout you received about the short guide, on the last page, since the issue of repealers and what's buried in repealers has often been raised in this committee, the text for the repealer that's mentioned is included on the last page. Only Subdivision 1 is the appropriate text. It has to do with the payment transparency section of the bill. With the new language in the bill, this language is no longer needed, so it was to replace that language. So I'm going to provide that.
Okay. What we're going to do is, when do we start tomorrow? We start at noon tomorrow, and John Walls will walk us through the spreadsheet, and hopefully we'll have all the language later today. So this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.